So sorry. I don't know what day I thought it was, but forgive me in advance. And if someone could give me a 5-minute warning, thank you, Sonny. Thank you,
Yes.
Sherry, for calling me. Thank you all for your patience. My name is Leslie Strange. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 2nd, 1988. And I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be amongst my friends, my new friends and old and so forth. Oh. I see a couple of people that I know in here. Hey, Ralph. And it's an honor to be here. This thing about sobriety is so amazing that every day that I am here, I discover something new or something that I had that I stood strong on and my belief was that shifted. For those of you who are new and don't know what I'm talking about, I hope I can explain it to you better by sharing with you my experience, strength, and hope, my life, my journey a little bit, and to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And what it was like was plain and simple. I couldn't control the intake. And once I took something inside my body, it set off something in motion, and I couldn't stop. And I thought it was just plain partying. I thought it was just enjoying my life. I thought it was just doing my own thing. I thought it was just being me. And it may have started out that way. And I can't really tell you when it shifted, but it started out that way. And they're like most, a lot of most of you may have had to start out that way. But something happened, and I can't tell you when that happened. I can't pinpoint it. I can tell you when it went from bad to worse, or give you some stories or some incidences where it went from this, and then I ended up doing these things. But until I met you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys gave me words to the unspeakable. You gave me descriptions to the indescribable. And you told me things like pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And I'm a smart girl, but I know I didn't need to read and look up those three words. I knew what pitiful felt like. I knew what incomprehensible means. Like I can't even describe it. And demoralization, well, I kind of knew that that was against morals. Against the morals either I was raised with, against the internal morals in my soul. But I knew something was wrong because I'd done all of that and put those three things together, and it was an awful feeling. And I did that a lot. My pattern usually would be start out with a couple of the smokable alcohol. Well, I'll just call it weed. I might start out with a joint, think I'm gonna get my giggle on and my little munchie on and get with some friends and have some good times. And then it would elevate or escalate to, having a little sip along with it because it gives you dry mouth. It gives you dry throat, Shelly. It makes you. So I got to get a little something to moisten, the palate. And then I take a little bit of a drink. That drink led to another drink. And then if I'm getting too drunk because I haven't eaten anything, I need to eat something, but I can't really eat. So I'd have to do some other substances that would, quench the or calm the nausea, And then so I do that little stuff. Now I can drink more. And then the drinking. So it was an endless cycle for me. It's an endless cycle. And it got progressively worse. And then I became an experimental person. I started trying this. If you handed it to me, you said it'll make me feel happy, or you didn't even tell me how it made me feel, I'd go on and try it anyway. Aaron, you know how that is. Somebody offer you something. In fact, if you're anything like me, they offer you something. You don't even ask what's in it. What will it do? Will I grow a horn? Will I, dance with one foot? Will I lose a leg? No, you just take it. It's like a death mission and you don't even know you're on it. And that was my pattern. And then it was covered up with, like Bill talked about, conviviality. It was covered up with all my friends are going out for happy hour, or we're going out for holiday drinks. So we're gonna go do this. So we're gonna go to a club. It's ladies' night. It was always covered and enveloped with this reason for going to party and celebrate. Just got paid, didn't get paid, new car. It's Friday, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday. And it went on and on like that for a long time. Now my active practice lasted about 9 years. I got sober when I was 28 years old. My sobriety date is November 2nd, 1988. So I was 28 years old when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 35 years sober now, and I'm 63 proudly to say that because I survived. And I'm surviving a day at a time. Every time that I'm away, I get another chance to fix some broken things. And it was always like that for a long time. I like to party. I like to go out, ladies' night, shoe night, hair night. It didn't matter. I just liked that. And you combine a little bit of the light effects and the DJ calling out your name and the bartender that knows your name at the end of the bar. And then you got the dancing and you got on a new outfit. Why wouldn't I want a drink? I wonder why they call alcohol a nightcap sometimes. My nightcap went on for about 9 years. I guess my night kept capping because it just went. Just thought of that, you know. So what made me hit my bottom was, well, participated in this beautiful awakening. It started out pretty like a regular day that I was going to do what I was going to do. And I tried to do what I go to do to get drunk or high or whatever it is you want to call it. And it didn't work. Nothing's more frustrating than to have all of the things that you need to have to get you to where you want to go, and you can't get there. Val, you know, when you sit there and you take one more drink and it don't work, or you're crying while you're taking the drink, or you're just as sad it didn't take you out of that depression, it's not working. I don't know if I said a prayer. I can't remember exactly what happened, but something happened. You know, there's something I like to talk about. With grace. I was just talking to a sponsee recently, and she said something profound to me. She said, I'm doing all the things. I'm doing all the things. I'm doing the writing. I'm going to meetings. I got got you as a sponsor. I'm doing all the things. I'm almost done with my four-step sponsor. I said, that's good, baby. I'm so happy for you. She said, I'm doing all the things. And I'm so proud of me that I've got 6 months or whatever it was. She said, I'm so proud of this. And I said, hold. Wait a minute. Back up. There's a thing that that I have taken for granted. And I try to share with my sponsors. Don't take for granted what grace does for you. See, because we get a couple 24 hours and we get a couple bits of pages and quotes and things that we know to do. And then all of a sudden, if you're like me, I think I got this. I'm doing good. I'm proud of myself. And I start giving myself accolades and I start clapping for myself. And I love when you guys clap for me because we're clapping bunch of people, and we'd be like, go girl, go Val for your 2, 3, 4 years and 10 years and go Ralph for your 30s. And we forget that it is grace. A lot of the times I should have been loaded in my recovery. You know, I said, baby, not to take anything from you, but remember, you're the one that decided to travel from one state to another and then call me after you did it. You're the one that decided, and I pointed out a few things that she was doing. I said, you're moving a little too fast. Just my offering to you, your consideration, I think you might want to slow it down a little bit because you're thinking that if I hurry up and do these steps and if I hurry up and do this, I can catch up to myself, but this program doesn't work in a hurry up pace. I used to think that too. If I hurry up and do my fourth step, I'll be straight. And then I went through all those steps when I got with that sponsor and I found out that that even made me dirtier. Because guess what? I was armed with facts about who I am. I found out, Michael, that I really, really did some not so good things. And I really, really needed to make a lot of amends to a lot of people. And I really, really did some ugly thinking and some ugly actions, and I needed to fix that. And I really didn't feel good about what was presented to me on that paper. So when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no clue. I wasn't introduced by way of a program and going to one of those classic mission programs and sober programs for women. And I came in because I was tired, and I came in and I started going to meetings and I jumped into the meetings. And the thing that I found out, I loved you guys. You know, it says something in the fifth step in 12 and 12, and it talks about being in isolation. And a lot of us still suffer with isolation. A lot of us still haven't found the fellowship we crave, even with double digits. And that's, if I was going to be isolated and alone and apart from in this disease, why would I want to come in here and be isolated and alone and apart from? So, I mean, for me, I like to think of it as I think God put us here to interlink, to come together, to touch each other. Alcohol and all that other stuff was a great separator. So my thing is, why am I in here and I feel lonely? Why am I in here and I don't have someone I can call on a regular basis and say, hey girl, what you doing? How you feeling? Where you been? I don't think that God designed me to be alone, in fact. So I'm just going to go into my little story about how I got sober, or stayed sober a day at a time. A lot of trials, a lot of dirt, a lot of falling in the mud, face down, in front of the whole fellowship. I got married twice. I had two boys, both in sobriety. And I've had affairs in these rooms, and I've done some inappropriate things and said some inappropriate things out loud in public from the podium. I've insulted people and I've cut people. I've stabbed people in the back and I've done some rude things. But you guys still love me. And that's one of the things I liked about the rooms is that, no, it's not necessarily that you get a pass, because some people just stop speaking to you. Okay, that's just sometimes the price you got to pay for your defects. But the thing about it is, those who love you will love you in spite of you. And they will love you through the trauma, and they will love you through your hurt, and they'll love you through your self-imposed crisis. They will love you anyway, especially a sponsor. I like to tell all the girls, I don't leave you, you leave me. A lot of girls come back and say, will you still sponsor me? Because they haven't talked to me in 4, 5, 6 months. I said, baby, I didn't move, you moved. See, I was taught that by the people who sponsored me and loved me past me. And I talked ill about that ex-husband, and I wanted to do things to him, and I wanted to strip him of his dignity, and I wanted to divorce him, and I wanted to take every dime out of his pocket. And I wanted to, just the resentment was so thick, and this was with double digits. And he was told to me, why would you do that? I started out going to meetings. They said 90 meetings in 90 days. I didn't hear the 90. I just kept going days and days and days and days. And you guys invited me with you. I like the company of people. I'm a gregarious girl. I like to get out and I like to be around a lot of people. I like to laugh. I like to make people laugh. And so I wasn't necessarily shy when you asked me to come to IHOP after the meeting and sit and have coffee to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. That was fun. I was invited somewhere. Because at the end of my disease, I was in a house by myself, hoping I could die. So for you guys to see me and want me to come hang out with you, it felt so great. And then the thing that was immediate for me, what caught my attention, was on the walls, those two panels on the walls, and listening to you guys share and watching you guys start this out with a prayer and end it with a prayer. I didn't have a problem with the God idea because I'm a recovering Catholic. So I had a fundamental idea of a God anyway. So when you guys said God and you look good and you talk in regular language that I could understand, I was like, I like these people. That's what made the attraction of the people, the attraction of how the men treated me, how the women treated me, how they stood tall, how they went to work, how they got their kids back. Just all those attractions, getting degrees, getting employable. I said, I want to be like these people. So I stuck around and I got a sponsor. And in spite of all my misdoings, misgivings, and misdirection and missteps, I stayed. Now, I could take credit and say, oh, yeah, I stayed in spite of. No, a lot of that was grace, because technically, a lot of times I should have probably been drunk. See, I suffer from a disease that starts up here in the middle of my brain. And even to this day, this thing starts talking without my permission. And even to this day. Like the fifth step says in the 12 and 12, they said, spiritually highly developed people almost always seek advice. They insist on directions from someone else. It also states that we need to be willing and surrendered enough to take directions. I dare not take directions, especially major decisions, without running it past them. One of you guys, or especially my sponsor, who knows everything. She knows where all the bodies are buried. She knows where all the stuff is. She knows stuff before I do it. And she started telling me, she said, baby, I just give you advice because I'm just here to remind you what you already know. But the amazing thing about this sponsorship thing and getting through this process, the process is so wonderful that it is designed to get you to have a spiritual experience if you follow the direction. If I give you one of my mother's recipe for her carrot cake and you the raisins, or you leave out the cinnamon, or you leave out the powdered sugar or something like that, you want to put your own twist on it. It's the first time you made it. It ain't going to taste so good. But the directions, the explicit step-by-step directions on how to do the 12 steps, it's purpose. It's definitely God-led. And I don't care what anybody says, but something gave them the idea that if we do this, after this, after this, then you can clean and transform if you are fully honest and you are willing. And I know it's hard. It took me over 18 months to do my first inventory. But now I do it gladly. Now I'm happy to do it. Now I'm excited to do it because now I've learned that I'm excited to see what God is making me into. I'm excited to see what's on the other side. Let me give you a few stories to back some of this stuff up. So when I first got married to my first husband, don't judge me. Here we go. When I got married to my first husband, we decided to do our taxes together. Just little stuff. We started to do our taxes together. And it came back with a letter that said, you owe us $500 and something. Now, I'm new in sobriety. I'm trying to be, because when you're new, if you're anything like me, I want to do exactly like this. You don't know, flex. I'm scared to move to the left a little bit because if I do, I'm not relapse. Thing was based on relapse. I was terrified. Oh, Lord, if I do this wrong, I'm going to die. I'm going to take a drink and die. So we did taxes together. We get a letter back from the IRS. Because see, I was always the treasury of the marriage because I handle money well. Go figure. And so we get this letter back saying we owe this amount of money for the IRS. And I'm like, damn, what are we going to do? So we're going to, it wasn't but a couple $100, but it was just a point. I'm terrified of the IRS, even to this day. They get my respect. I hate to see the mail with department. My nerves are shot out. Some of y'all terrified right now. In fact, somebody just opened a letter. But anyway. And we get this letter and I'm terrified. And you would think a grown woman, I should know. And I called my sponsor. I got this letter here and all this. She said, well, baby, you pay it. I said, but pay it? She said, yeah, you put a check in there. But at the time, we didn't have, how you put a check in there and send it back to him. I said, but that's a whole lot of money. I mean, 1988, $400 was a lot of money. It's like, that's a lot of money. She said, it doesn't matter. It's not your money anyway. See, it was little things like that that would blow my wig back. I'd be like, wow, that was deep. Everything was deep for me. I was like, it was amazing. Like, if you don't drink, you don't get drunk. Or if you keep your hands to yourself, you don't go to jail. If you put a zip on your lips, you won't hurt nobody. Feel like just little things, those little things that we forget about, like shut up. And they didn't ask you. And nobody care about your opinion. And I send the money in. Couple weeks go by, get a letter back. Oops, we're sorry. We miscalculated. In fact, here's your $400 back plus an extra five or six or something. Nobody send no money back to the IRS. Now, to y'all, it's just like, okay, that was one of the biggest first miracles. I don't know why I'm telling that story. It was one of the biggest first miracles of this program that I had ever experienced. I was like, no. IRS gave me, I had to go to the podium and share. You knew you got to share everything. So let me tell you what happened at my job. I got 2 cents an hour raise. We clap for the ridiculous. But we clap because we've been beating ourselves up. Those claps were punches and gut punches and self-imposed punches for so long. Any good news is great news. I have another good story for you that's awesome. And I'm not here to go through the steps and all. I'm just wanting to tell you the results of following these steps. When my oldest son was younger, one of my biggest things is I couldn't stand my mother, and I didn't want to be like my mother. My mother was mean. She could touch you. Her tongue could touch you like a knife. She can call you everything, start with a B and end with an H. She could throw shoes at you, ashtrays with a cigarette hanging out her mouth. But then she gave me everything. Catholic school girl, Pamela knows, the bedroom, the canopy bed from Sears with the matching furniture, the record player with Michael Jackson pictures all on the wall, and all of those beautiful things, taking me to concerts and all that. And that was her love language. I just make sure I take care of my kids. But then other side was she was abusive. And I had to learn as I've gotten older in recovery, check out where your parents came from. Check out what era they came from. Check out what their parents did to them. And start, if your parents are still alive, start asking your mom stuff. You grown? Mom, did it ever itch down there? What did you do? You know, but just make up some stuff. I wanted to wake y'all up because y'all sitting here looking at me. So, you know, it's okay. So, because of that, and because of some untreated defects and shortcomings. Now, mind you, I've done the inventory quite a few times. I was aware. But like it says in our book, and I just like to pick out pieces that stand out for me. It says in our book, it's just a look-see. Just because I know, and when I do these things, it's just a look-see. The work comes when I start taking action and doing footsteps on recognizing, first of all, being awake and aware of my defects when they start to come up. Knowing what they are is one thing, but being awake and aware and recognize, uh-oh, here she come. The other thing is how to take alternative actions and use alternative spiritual tools like pause, pray, and proceed. Like restraint of pen and tongue, like sit down somewhere, go somewhere, be alone for a minute, and then come back. Like picking up the phone and deciding, do I want to take this call? Am I spiritually in order or fit enough to take this call? Would I cause them more harm if I have the attitude I have right now and I pick this phone up and I hit accept the call? Am I equipped to take this call right now? Just those simple tools, some of them in the book, some not, some we just come together creatively and say, well, why don't you try this? Instead of always trying to tell someone what they did right, I caught you on that lie and I know you lied. I just told a friend's mom the other day, I said, just don't, there's nothing. You pointing out her lying to you is not going to change her. Because if that was the case, every time we did something wrong and somebody pointed it out and it caused a change, I think we wouldn't need this problem. So just be quiet. Well, I found out what my defects were. And one of my defects was I was verbally and physically abusive. And one time, you know, I tried the old school way of spanking my son. He was about 10 or 11 years old. So I had him take his pants down and I spanked him with a belt. And I had never done that before. Where did that bright idea come from? Ain't nothing cute, nothing cool about that. But I'm double digits, I'm sponsoring. I'm doing the program. I'm doing the meetings. Jonathan drops his pants. I whip him. He goes to school crying, sad from the night before, tells the teacher. Next thing, downstairs at my condo, there's a buzz, and there is a person from child welfare at my door. Double digits, me. Not only do I have Jonathan, I but this since at that time had a new baby. Baby was still wearing diapers, Miles. Excuse me. So the lady came upstairs and she looked around and they do what they do. They ask questions. They had talked to Jonathan by himself. And I'm terrified. I don't have time to call my sponsor. What am I going to do? This lady's in my house. Didn't know. Let the lady in. She goes through my cabinet. She goes into the refrigerator. She looks in the closets. Everything looks okay. There's food in the cabinet. It looks pretty nice. Thank God my house was halfway decent. She tells me to take my baby's diaper off so she can check his body for bruises and stuff like that. Me. Good old sponsoring AA Leslie. Yeah, you. And she sat down and she talked to me. She said, "This is the thing. You can reprimand your children and you can spank your children, but you cannot tear flesh. You cannot take their. You cannot have faith. You cannot have flesh, hand to flesh, or whatever to flesh contact." And she said, "I'm going to close this case, and you seem to be okay." That was grace. That 10-year-old young man grew up to be a young man going to the army. He had, I don't know if it was because of me, he was a molestation. My best friend's son molested him. We were both double digits then. The son was 16 or so. That same boy was about 6 years old. Told me later that that happened to him. So I think all those things combined, and you know how mothers do, we become the victim. And so I'm thinking something I did wrong. So it was a combination of a few things. I didn't take him to therapy after that happened. To this day, he had nervous breakdowns, so on, yada, yada, yada. So to this day, every time I see my child, I've admitted to that boy so many times. He said, "Mom, not again." He said, "Mom, you don't have to say nothing. You're okay." But the shadows of the memory in my head of how I treated this kid who didn't deserve that. He's not a bad kid. Never been arrested. Never been to jail. Never been in handcuffs. Will help. The guy, I live in Atlanta. He helped a neighbor that had a rebel flag in his yard clean up his yard as he was walking by one day. I said, "You went down to Jethro's house and helped him." He said, "Yeah. You don't understand. I have a black son, not only in dark black." And I'm in a, so I had to live with that. But I made amends for that. And he loves me nonetheless. And I've improved as a parent. I listen now. I give both my boys the option to talk to their mother or talk to a spiritual advisor. Who you want to talk to right now? The other son was, he's a whole nother case. He scares me because he's just like me. He's gregarious. He's got a lot of fun in him, a lot of personal opinion, but he stands on spirit. So we talk about spiritual things, and he's a great guy, great kid. And my living amends to him has been amazing. It's to pay attention when he talks. Thank you, Mama. Pay attention when he talks to me. Allow him to talk to me about whatever he wants to talk to me about, whether it's private parts of his body or what's wrong with his girlfriend or what's wrong with the universe or why it taxes this way. It doesn't matter, because if we all had parents to talk to us with truth and honesty, maybe some of us wouldn't have ended up in here. I don't know. I know it's a spiritual and a physical disease. I'm just guessing. I don't have a clue. Or maybe we would have parents to talk to us like I talk to us, and that doesn't prevent my children end up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous anyway. I just know I do the best I can and be the best person I can. And I have this thing now that if you get me as a friend, you got a good ass friend. If nothing else, I'll make you laugh about your pain. If nothing else, I can make you laugh about yourself. And then I'll tell you a story about me, and me and Pam will be in Hawaii rolling around off the bed laughing at each other. Swearing, pinky promising, we ain't tell nobody this, but dying. Making memories, skipping time, sitting down and enjoying the moment. If you're, I give you, I'm going to say this and be done, Sonny. Thank you. If you're sitting in a beautiful space, you can stretch, and this is my spiritual belief. Forgive me if it sounds crazy. You can stretch that space and time by slowing it down because I'm in it. I can sit at the 12 Coconuts meeting at the beach in Hawaii next to my girl Pam and say, "Pam, take a look at this. Look around. Now slow it down. Take a mental picture of this moment right here. Slow it down." And I think with my tone, with everything going on around us, she was able to feel that and embrace that. Because if I stay in the right now, I can enjoy the right now and I can stretch the honeymoon of the right man. I've learned so much and I learned so much and I learned so much. I just spent a month in Barbados and it was a spiritual experience because I was there for 2 weeks by myself toward the end. And I sat with me, God, the ocean breeze, the loud ass rooster hollering. And I just sat and I did some writing and some burning and some saging and some praying and some gratitude and some thanksgiving and looking over my day and evaluating my life going forward and seeing, asking God, what would you have me to be? What's the best position on this earth you would put me in? What would you want from me? How can I be of service? How can I help? Getting sponsees calling me on WhatsApp. Their dad's going in the hospice. Their mom has just died. Their uncle has just had a stroke. Getting those kind of calls in Barbados, things that are unthinkable. There were so many miraculous moments. I can't even begin to explain to you the shift. Because I told God, when I go here, God, I don't know what you're sending me for, but I want a visible shift in my soul that shows on the outside. I'm not crying tears of sadness. I am so excited and happy about my life, my journey right here. And I got people like Pam to walk me home, hold my hand. It's all we need is a partner to walk us home. And you know where home is. Not just AA, but after AA. So if you don't have a study buddy, a swimming buddy, a hangout partner, you need to get one because nothing feels better than to walk home from school with a whole bunch of y'all. Wasn't that fun when you was a kid? And if one person was missing, what happened to so-and-so today? Oh, they were sick today. Okay, but the other four of us walk home. I just want you to be invited to come to a place where you can walk home hand in hand with somebody and we ain't gonna laugh at you. We gonna clap for you. My name is Leslie Strange and I'm a recovering alcoholic. Thank you so much, Sonny. I love you, Sonny.
Thank you, Leslie. AA has no duty.